I'm going to do a talk on a trip that I took to the Ivory Coast or Côte d'Ivoire this past January. Some of you guys were in Indiana Bible Camp and you heard something similar, but it was just about 10 minutes. This is, Joe gave me more time. I think he felt bad because he took some of my time when we were talking together. No, he didn't feel bad about that at all. Yeah. So there's going to be a few more details in this. So I want to tell you about that trip, but before I want to tell you why I wanted to take that trip and kind of the background for me. So really the desire for this came my first time around Indiana Bible Camp and Soul Camp. I was 15 years old, about 7 years ago. And at Indiana Bible Camp, camp similar to this, I'd heard some people talk about going overseas, and it really inspired me to want to do something like that. And it was actually on the trip up and back from Soul Camp that I was talking with Gary about these kinds of things, and we worked out the fact that I spoke French, so I was working on French, I had taken it in high school, and so I should consider looking at a place that didn't have people going there to share the gospel that spoke French. I didn't know that there were places like that, but there are, and so that's what I considered. And so over the next 7 years, I was working on my French, I was working by God's grace to try to grow spiritually and different things like that. So I want to tell you about the Ivory Coast a little bit, the country. So Abidjan's the main city that I went to, but there, I think that surprises a lot of people. All of those things in blue is French-speaking West Africa. That's a lot of countries that speak French in Africa. I had no idea at first, and I think a lot of people don't understand that there are that many places that speak French. So there are about 120 million people or more in Africa that speak French. It's a lot of people, and I don't know of any Christians going over there, and that doesn't mean there aren't any, but I don't know of any going over there to share the gospel with them. So it means there's a large need in that area. The country that I visited, the one in orange there, that's Côte d'Ivoire. It has about 24 million people there, and most of them speak French. The city that I visited is Abidjan, and it's a city of 5 million people. That's a big city. In fact, it's the third largest French-speaking city in the world. You have Paris, and then Kinshasa, and then Abidjan. And about 99% of the people in Abidjan speak French. But I don't know of any Christians going over there to share the gospel with these people. And so that's why I wanted to go to this place. Because they need the gospel, and if other people are doing it by God's grace, then I should be looking for these kinds of opportunities as well. So as far as on this trip that I took in January, we had a couple goals in our mind. The first goal was we were trying to explore. So I had never been there. I didn't know anybody that had ever been there. And there's only so many things that you can look up on Wikipedia as far as information about a country. There's things you just got to be on the ground to figure out. So we're going to explore, figure things out while we were there. The second thing we were trying to do was to make contacts, to meet people, to ask them about their country from them, but also to take that opportunity to talk to them about the Lord. Tell them why we were there. We were there because we're Christians and we want to talk to people about Jesus. And we like the Bible and those kinds of things. So that's what we wanted to do. And then there was a third goal, kind of on the forefront of my mind, was I had talked about wanting to go to Côte d'Ivoire for 7 years. It's been my goal to move there someday, and this is my trip. And so in the forefront of my mind is, can and should I move here? Like, I've talked about it a lot. I've talked about it with a bunch of people. But could I actually do this? Should I actually do this? So that was on my mind as far as the goals of this trip. The people that went with me on this trip, I had Greg and Micaiah Sterley that went with me. Some of you guys know them. A lot of you don't. They live down in Kentucky. They're Christians where I grew up going to church. And this is interesting. We talked. Tim talked to us yesterday. Tim works a normal job. Greg is a firefighter, but he took time off work, and he paid for himself to go with me on this trip. He paid for his son to go with me on this trip just to encourage me and to help me. But they didn't have any particular reason to go to Côte d'Ivoire other than they were trying to help me in going over there. That was such a blessing to me. And so we need to consider whether or not we're willing to do those kinds of things. It was a big deal that Greg was there, and even in his willingness to go. So my first conversation was like, hey, so I want to go to this third world country. I need somebody to go with me. You want to go? Sure. I don't know anybody there. I don't know anybody who's been there. All right, cool. Let's do it. I'll take my son too. Is it safe? I don't know. Google says kind of. So he was willing to go. He was willing to take his son with us. And so it was a huge blessing. Greg had a lot of leadership, and most people thought he was my dad, which was an interesting thing. But he had wisdom, and that was helpful. And Micaiah brought his own wisdom, and he helped record our trip and pictures and things like that. So they were both a blessing to me in this. I want to share a couple things about this trip, kind of how we went about things. It's a little bit different. You know, I've been out of the country a couple of other times, and those trips we were like really focused on teaching people all the time. Our schedule was filled. That's a huge blessing. Well, here I didn't know anybody, so it wasn't as much going around teaching people as it was figuring things out. So I want to share a few of those things with you. But first I want to share what my initial reaction was when I got to the country. So I told you I had that in the forefront of my mind, can and should I do this? And so I had a friend beforehand that I had talked to who also wanted to move to an African country. And he had told me about his first trip, had the same thing on his mind. He gets there, he gets off the plane, he looks around, can and should I do this? Yeah, I can do it. And that was his thought. He just thought, yeah, I can do this. And he had a really wonderful trip. It was helpful for him. It was good. So I get off the plane. We get through the airport successfully just using French. And I get out of the airport and I look around and I think, what am I doing here? I am totally out of my element. I don't know anybody here. This is not comfortable to me. It smelled bad. It did not look grand or like this amazing thing that I had imagined being in Africa would be like. And so I share that because this was a cool idea to me, going to Africa, taking the gospel to those places. And I had a lot of time to romanticize that, to make it seem really noble and adventurous and to focus on those things. And so I want you all to think about it. If you're thinking about doing foreign evangelism work, we have to make sure our priorities are straight, that we're not focused on some adventure, but we're focused on giving glory to God, and we're focused on the fact that we're helping the lost. That needs to be our goal. In fact, that needs to be our goal no matter where we are. And so that was a helpful, humbling moment for me when I first got out of the plane and out of the airport. And so this lady came to pick us up from the airport. She was the person that was going to take us back to the place that we were staying. And so she got a taxi for us. She's sitting in the back. This is my first interaction here. I told you, I had this feeling I would be miserable here. I had a pit in my stomach when we first arrived. And so she's trying to talk with me, and this is all in French. And I know there's several people here who speak multiple languages. This is my first experience where it was complete immersion. You know, in the U.S., if I speak to somebody and we don't understand each other in French, we just switch back to English. There was no switching back to English. And that was a hard moment to realize that. So she's talking to me, and I'm having a hard time understanding what she's saying. Eventually, she asked me a question I understood. She said, "What are you doing here?" And it was kind of like that, too. It just does not make sense. What is this American doing in my country when he doesn't even speak this language well? So I felt prepared for that. I said, "I'm here because I'm a Christian, and we love the Lord, and we want to talk to people about Jesus." And she said, "Oh," and remember, this is all in French. But she said, "How do you expect to convert people when your French is so bizarre?" And yeah, so I laughed, but that hurt too. Like I told you, I was already feeling out of my element in this place. And then this lady confirms that for me. I shouldn't be here, is what I felt. But I told her it was a fair question. It was right. Part of this trip was to help me practice my French, to evaluate, to see what things I needed to continue to work on. And that's what it was. So, and it was a good thing. 2 weeks there, I was able to work on French a lot. That was a blessing. So one thing that happens, and some of you guys have experienced this as well, when you're working on a language and you're using it all day, it's really tiring when you're not fluent in it. And it's just constantly thinking, how do I translate this into that? How do I translate it over and over again? Sometimes so much so that you forget how to say something in English because you're thinking about it so much in the other language. I was telling somebody about the fresh fruit we had over there. And I was like, we had ananas. Yeah, we had a bunch of ananas. And I couldn't remember how to say it in English. It's pineapple. But I couldn't remember what to say because I translated that word so many times in my mind and into French. And so it was cool to see some, I don't know if that's progress really, but just getting things stuck in my head in French while I was over there. So that was my first interaction. It was discouraging. My first couple days there were discouraging. But over time, several things helped as we got active over there. A few things helped. Once we got to know the place better, once we connected with more people, and then really afterwards, as I focused less on myself, less on my own inadequacy, and focus more on what God can do, even through people that are doing their best but aren't the best. Does that make sense? So So that was helpful. So I want to share some things as far as what we did. It was really cool to see God's hand in these things, because you had three people that didn't know what they were doing, didn't know where they were, but he kept us safe. Even when we went to parts of town that we were told not to go to, we did that on accident. And we were able to connect with people. We were able to figure things out. That was a huge blessing. So here's some pictures of Abidjan. And it's an interesting city. It's third world, but it's kind of a mixture of both nice and not so nice. You can see some of these areas here. You see people washing clothes in a creek side. That was a thing that happened. You see these huts, these shacks that people lived in over here. And then at the same time, we had, so here's some more, yeah, huts and shacks and different things like that. There's a marketplace in Abidjan. But then you had this picture up here, which is a mall. And so where I stayed was about a half mile away from a mall. I had more Burger King in Cote d'Ivoire than I've ever had in the U.S. because they had a Burger King in that mall. So it's kind of a mixture. You have really nice and then really not so nice. And that made it for an interesting place to be. As far as how we figured stuff out, some of it was just getting out there, trying to do what we could. The other things is we connected with people. Some of those people were people who could share wisdom with us. One of these guys up here on the top was my French tutor in America. His brother-in-law lived in Abidjan. So we connected with him, and he was able to share some things with us in English. This other guy down here named Bob, he was a kind of a preacher from a different spiritual background. And so he was willing to get together with me. He'd been there for 20 years to share some kind of like the ropes of being in Abidjan. What's it like? What's the healthcare like? What's the safety like? Infrastructure, politics, all those kinds of things in that country. He had a lot of good insights. So those are a couple of ways that we figured things out and connected with people were some of these people that gave us helpful insights. And then other than that, we just talked to people. And it was interesting as I thought through this, what we did in Abidjan was not much different than what we need to be doing over here in the U.S. The people that I connected with were taxi drivers. We talked with a lot of them. A lot of them were Muslim, so I was able to talk to them about the differences between Islam and Christianity. We talked to people who were helping us do stuff. There was one guy, Jean-Francois, who's down here in the corner. He was just the guy that helped us get our SIM cards, but he was really kind to us, and we were able to connect and talk about the Lord. And this guy, Gallo, he was in the marketplace. We saw him reading his Bible, Proverbs chapter 10, so it was a good opportunity to talk to him. And on my street that I was staying on, every day between 4 and 7 o'clock, that's like when people would get home from work and things like that, I would just go out and I would just start talking to people. There's a mother's son right here, Juliet, and her son, Stefan. They had one of the booths there. They sold fried bananas. I like their fried bananas. And we were able to talk a lot about the Lord and different things like that. So we were able to connect with people really wherever we were. And I think it's a helpful thing to think about. We need to be doing the same thing here. Maybe it's a little bit different because I'm in a foreign country, but we need to connect with people wherever we go, those that we have common interaction with. So that's how we connected with people while we were over there. As far as now my goals, so that was a trip. I was there for 2 weeks. We figured stuff out, and that was helpful. We connected with some people. I still have some contact with people. People like Jean-Francois are willing to study the Bible with me in French, so there's some good opportunities from that. Now my goals are to continue to work on French, because I need to, and to work on French Bible material. That's something that I need to get better in. I can have a conversation with somebody, but I need to do more in how to study the Bible with them. And then, other than that, do what I can where I am. If we're not, I mean, people have quoted it a bunch, but if we're not doing it at home, we're not going to do it in Rome. So I need to be active in these things here. And then, God willing, my goal is to move to Cote d'Ivoire in several years. So those are the things for me. This is a trip that I took. Some practical lessons, I think, for us. One, our priorities need to be straight. We talked about that. But we can't be focusing on something being adventurous. We need to be focusing much more on the glory of God and on helping the lost. Secondly, we need to do what we can to prepare, then focus on the adequacy of God and less on our own inadequacy. It's not about us. And if you're like me, you struggle to think about it, about yourself all the time. And we need to focus more on the Lord and what He's able to do. I mean, if God didn't use inadequate people, who would He use? Right? I mean, that's all of us. So whatever task that we have in front of us to do the work of the Lord, He's using inadequate people that He makes adequate to the task by His grace. And then the third thing, we need to be taking the top opportunities around us. So those are the things that I have. I'm sure that was way less than an hour. But that's those are the things that I wanted to share with you. Do you guys have any questions or things? Gary.
So can you share with us your current plan?
Okay, yeah. So my current plan is in about a year, if God wills, I'd like to move to Sierra Leone, which is not Cote d'Ivoire, right? It's a different country in Africa. But Dan Kane, whom a lot of you know, he wants to move to Sierra Leone. And so we've been trying to find people to go with us to either place, and neither one of us have been successful. So we said, well, why don't we go together? And so the plan is right now to go to Sierra Leone for about 2 to 3 years and to work with the Christians there to stabilize, help mature them, then come back to the States for about 6 months to a year to work on French, everybody, all four of us, and then for us to move to Cote d'Ivoire to be there more long-term, working with the lost in Abidjan and other areas there in French-speaking West Africa. So does that summarize my plan? Okay.
I didn't catch on. How long was that trip you made?
It was just 2 weeks.
But you got a lot of opportunity in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's amazing just to see just how being open to talking to people just presents opportunities. I think
yeah.
We forget about it.
It's yeah, I know. Yeah, it was a huge blessing. Stephen? Yeah. So about 40% of the people in Cote d'Ivoire are Muslim. About 35% are Catholic. And then 10 to 15% are Protestant, a lot of charismatic. And then about 10 to 15% animist, like the sun is a god, the rock is a god, kind of things like that. That's a religious breakdown. But religiously, something that I found very common was religious tolerance. I would talk with these Muslims about the differences, and they may share some differences, but they'd all come back and say, but it's the same God. Well, obviously, I would disagree with that. But you see their attitude. They were trying to show tolerance, trying to show compromise in those things. And so that's something that I think is going to be a big deal, trying to deal with that. Alex?
Was it hot
there? It was hot. Yeah. It was very hot, to my memory, I think. Yeah, Chase?
Will you share with us the... I remember you and I talking about a couple different churches you visited while you were there, the one church, and just your experience with them.
Yeah, so I did get to visit a church while I was over there. They were a more institutional-leaning church, and we didn't know what to expect, but they were very kind and welcoming to us. They wanted us to be there to work with them. So I don't know exactly what opportunity is going to look like for that in the future as far as helping and working with them, but that was something that happened. Yeah, Ben. So people were open to talking about the Lord, and that's something that maybe I need to clarify. I didn't feel comfortable, like prepared, to sit down and just work through a Bible study with somebody. And so that's something that I'm working on now. I was able to have biblical conversations, open up our Bibles together and talk about it, and people were open to that. So many people were open to that, if that makes sense. Mr. Jeff?
It's not for, I think, primarily because of the inability in the language.
Correct, yes, that was correct. Yeah, Tim.
Is it a peaceful country? Are they at war?
Currently, it is peaceful. They had a civil war several years ago, and that, I don't know, I don't want to be ominous about the future. Something may crop up again because of politics there. Zach?
You mentioned one man reading the Bible in the market. Was that like common? Did they have a lot of Bibles there? Or was that just like very cool?
Yeah, I think in Abidjan, biblical access is probably pretty good. I'm not positive, though, at least in the areas that we were in. So there was like one area, Adjamé. We were told not to go there, and so it was our first trip, and everybody said, don't go to Adjamé, and so we didn't. I think that's the poorest area, but it's unsafe. There are about 1 million people in that area. But, yeah. Gary?
So what have you done to try to learn French? What would you say if somebody is thinking about learning a language? How do you do that? How hard is that?
You definitely can't cram study for a language. So I took it in high school some. I took it online. But the most helpful thing is trying to find people who speak that language and being willing to talk with them. That was the biggest help to my French. There's a group in Louisville that meets together, and you find them on Meetup, and they just talk in French together. And so that was a huge help. Trying to read my Bible in French is something that I'm doing French vocabulary, those kinds of things. Or what I'm working on currently. So, yeah.
Is Abidjan where you live in?
Very urban. Yeah. Yeah, Grady.
When you put up the map of all the French speaking companies in Africa, did I understand you correctly that you said you don't know any Christians or any of those French people? Or?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. That doesn't mean there aren't people going, but not to people that I've talked to about that. Gary?
So, the other thing I'm interested in talking about a little bit is, I mean, you started with this thought several years ago when you were a teenager. What have you done to try to grow spiritually and to prepare yourself spiritually to be able to do this?
As far as that, I mean, trying to dig into the Word more, trying to talk to people who have done these kinds of things. I mean, that's been a big deal for me. As many people as I can talk to that are active or have done foreign evangelism, I talk to them. Trying to combat the sins in my life, trying to be open about those things, or as far as trying to grow spiritually, that's things that I've been doing. Ben?
Do you have any plans to move outside of Abidjan? Like, when you're there to, you know, try and bring people from surrounding areas into the church as well?
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. I'm not exactly sure how all that would work, but yeah. So the plan would be anywhere in Cote d'Ivoire, Abidjan being the home base in that. Chase?
Yeah, so I know you've been on other trips in the past, and a couple of them when you were still a teenager. Do you mind to speak to that and how that kind of helped you, even though you didn't go to Abidjan with the French in order to study with people? Just talk about those trips. I know that you went on with Simon and Don and others to help prepare you.
I mean, it was good to... It was good because I got to see the third world, right? So I had seen destitute poverty before, that kind of thing. It was good to go with people who had already done that kind of thing. I went to South Africa. My wife's grandparents live in South Africa, so I got to spend several months over there learning from them what is it like to live in a in another country. And so that was really helpful. So those things were good. Yeah, Luke?
So are you, when you go down there, are you planning to join an already existing congregation or start a new one?
My plan would be to start a new one. Yeah, that's my thought process. Justin?
You recently married. Can you talk to the thought process, you know, bringing your wife into this dream, what considerations you're making as a husband for this? I mean, I know that's a big part of this move. You know, Dan and Sonia are married, expecting a little one in just a couple of weeks. Surely raising a family in a third world country, that's something you're thinking about.
I would not go about things the way that I went about things. So when I first decided, and this is another maybe a lesson, when I first decided I wanted to move to Cote d'Ivoire, I'm a really obsessive person. So when I get something on my mind, I'm just like all in. And so all in to me meant I'm not going to get married, because if I get married, what if my wife doesn't want to move over there? I'm not going to have kids, obviously, because I'm not married. And so because something could go wrong with them and I wouldn't be able to go to this country. And really, I was not trusting in the Lord at all. I was trying to take everything into my own hands in this. And so that was my thought process until Abby and I got close. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll get married. But when I made it clear beforehand, I would, like I said, I would not suggest doing this. Like, if we're going to date, if we're going to get married, you have to be willing to go to Africa. And that was not very kind or helpful to Abby at all. But thankfully, she is willing to do that. She knew that that was my vision to try to teach the lost in that country. And so for her, what I saw in her was she had compassion towards the lost. And so whether that was the lost here or the lost in another country, that was a quality in her that drew me to her.
So what kind of preparations have the two of you been making together for friends? Is she learning French as well?
So she's about to take her first French courses, yeah. So that was one of the things. We had talked about it. We dated for several years, and she was not willing to learn French until there was a ring on the finger. So I felt like that was a fair thing from her. So there's a ring on the finger. We're married, and she's working on French now. Yeah, Reagan. Yeah, so no, I just looked it up online. And so we had no idea what we were going to walk into, what we were going to find, because we just saw it online. That was really complicated even getting there. because they give you an address, but oftentimes these third world countries, like, there's not really a street address or a sign outside or anything like that. So, yeah, that was kind of complicated, but we made it. Yeah, Jonah. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's a normal thing either. I did it because I felt like it was the situation I was presented with. I don't know that I would normally suggest that, but that's what things were like in Abidjan. So, and I didn't go alone. I wasn't planning on going alone. Thankfully, I had Greg and Micaiah with me to help in that. Is that? I think it depends on where you are. So like I described Abidjan, there's those main areas, Adjamé, I heard from people, and I didn't go in there, but it would be very unsafe for me to go in there, particularly at night. We didn't travel at night very much. I felt comfortable on my street where I was to go out at night because I knew enough people out there. But as far as how many sacrifices, there would be sacrifices, but I didn't feel like Abidjan was totally an unsafe place to be, if that makes any sense. Noah?
Are there any Christians you've been in contact with who might be interested in being Mennonite?
No. I don't think so. I'm just trying to think. I don't think I've talked to anybody else who's interested in at least moving over there. I know people who are interested in visiting over there, which is helpful too. Scott?
I just want to maybe put the move on. Because there are some folks who could have passed a good place, a trip, a follow up trip, like Paul's third missionary trip would be very effective. But when you're going to a place to start from scratch, I really appreciate the fact that you want to move there. Remember when we went to East Europe, people would ask, well, who's going to set up the preacher appointments and stuff? Yeah, well, you're going there to start from scratch. And guys that went for a few weeks did almost, you know, nothing. Those of us that stay, you know, half a year to a year did something, but not the last thing we're picking. These guys really stayed there. Mm-hmm. But that's where the work gets done. And so I really appreciate it. And I understand the going, taking this trip,
I have a comment and a question. My first comment is you may have done some things wrong in your courting and marriage, but you did the one thing that was right, and that is you married up.
Yeah, that's so, true. Absolutely
that
true.
That was a plus right there. You married up, so that was a good thing. Hey, that's no reason to smack. I'm telling you, you married up. The other thing is, I'm here for you. Exactly. So did you. Okay. All right, so here's my question. So does the French have a decent translation, and how hard was it for you to get a hold of the French Bible?
So French Bibles are easy to get online. I didn't try to get any in Abidjan, although I did talk to a guy that distributes those in Abidjan. The translations, I think they have a couple good ones. They have one that's basically like the King James, the Louis Sagan. They have the Sagan 21, which I'm assuming is similar to like a New King James. And then I use the NEG. I think it's good from different people I've talked to, but it was hard because the guy I talked to there, it was difficult to figure out because it seems like some of those things are personal opinion. But by and large, I think there are a couple good versions.
So the one you said, kind of like the King James, is it old French? Has French evolved in the same way English has?
Yeah, it has. So that's why I wanted, because I'm working on French and I'm reading the Bible in French, to also help me in my French. And so I didn't want to use that version and be outdated in everything that I was saying when I would talk to people.
I think I know the obvious answer to this, but are you aware of any like French hymnals that are good and reliable, or is that something you feel like you might need to produce? Or?
So, yeah, there are a couple good French hymnals, to my knowledge. I've seen a couple. I think I have one. Ed Smith went to Cameroon, yeah. Which is a French... So Ed Smith's been to Cameroon. That's a French-speaking country. But I believe he was mostly working in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon.
Would there be any support from Brethren that we might know, or that you might know in France, other places that speak French, that you could make a stopover, perhaps, and get some encouragement and even some pointers about which Bible would be better, maybe some hymnals that would be... From Brethren, actually. Is that a possibility? No.
I think it is a possibility. I had contact with a guy in France who was a Christian. He never emailed me back. But I have had contact. So he did email me, and then I emailed him back, and then we never... So maybe I just need to reach out to him again. See about that. Yes.
Why are you in a country and you're going to be
kind of... How do you think yourself? So... Good, as far as, you know, Gary's talk tonight, right? So I should be willing to support myself. My intention would be to receive outside support from Christians. If that were not possible, I would look into other ways. I don't know that there is industry over there that I could make a very... I don't know. I've thought through that some, but currently my plan would be to be supported outside by Christians.
Thanks. I know a brother that went and lived in France for, I think, 5 years or so. Vance Trefethen, he used to worship with us. I don't know if you know him or if you would be, that'd be a useful contact. That was France, that wasn't Africa, but if it's helpful, I can pass you his information. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything like that's helpful, for sure. Because, like I said, I don't know of people doing these kinds of, but that doesn't mean there aren't people doing it. I don't know everybody, so that is helpful.
And just for clarification, he wasn't there for preaching, he was there for work, but he was still a Christian there involved in the
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right.
Amen. First, three